to the book of Job, chapter 23. We'll begin there tonight. That's right. Y'all deserve punishment for something, I'm sure. I don't know what, but we'll think of something later. We still have about 20 chapters of Job. We're going to do about half of them tonight. Save the other half for next time. I almost like to. I hear you. Camille held up three fingers. I tell you, this segment won't be hard covering 10 chapters, but this is the key of it. There are times in the Bible where God himself speaks. And the parts where he's speaking himself. Now we know it's all inspired by him to have it written down, but we know there are other Bible characters who speak, and there's sometimes where it's just a narrative of the event. There are some times when God himself speaks, as in the Gospels, when Jesus says something. We know that's a lot more important than when they're just recording something the Pharisees said. That what Jesus has to say is a lot more important than what those other folks say. Well, we're going to have one of those opportunities in Job. God's going to come down and he's going to talk with Job and his friend. And it's going to make a huge impact. And I tell you, I'd like to spend about a month on just that section where God's speaking. But we'll try to see if we can break it up a little bit, but not too much. But we're going to look at the last few little speeches here in chapters 23 through 31. is. He says, why, seeing times are not hidden from the Almighty, that of course is God. So he says, God knows all about the proper times and everything. He says, so why then do they that know him not see his days? In other words, why do they not see his judgment come? We talked in other places in the Bible, we read about the day of the Lord coming. And in many cases, that refers to God's judgment upon the wicked and his vindication then of the righteous. And so he says, since God knows all these things, how come I don't get to see this judgment come to pass? How come I don't get to see him vindicate the righteous and punish the wicked? How am I not getting to see that? Job again is thinking that he has been ill-treated, and other people then that have done wickedly perhaps are getting away with things. We've all felt that way at times. It's not fair. These bad things are happening to me. I've been doing nothing but good. That fellow over there has been wicked as can be, and they're prospering. They're doing well. That's not right. Why won't God come down and straighten things out? And that's kind of the feeling that Job is having here. He goes on then to explain all these wicked people through chapter 24, all the things that they do. And indeed, they are some evil people that he describes. And then in chapter 25, Bildad makes his final response. And as I said, the responses of his friends just get shorter and shorter. And Job's responses get longer and longer until God shows up. And God silences all of them. We'll see that next time. Then chapter 25, verse number 3, Bildad, and of course we've had to be very particular about which things we pull out of the speeches of his three friends, because we know that his three friends were not inspired by God. They were just men. And so some of the things that they said, God himself later on even is going to say that some of the things that Job's friends said about him weren't right. So we have to be very careful when we're looking at the book of Job to realize the whole thing is inspired by God to be recorded exactly as it took place. But the things that the friends said may not always be accurate, so we do have to be careful. I think it's very clear, though, that verse 3 here is as accurate a statement as any man could make concerning God. He says, is there any number to his army? Then he goes on to say, and upon whom does not his light arise? He makes the point that God is over all. There's no end to his army. If he needed an army to fight, he could raise one up as he did with Ezekiel in the Valley of the Dry Bones. He just get a bunch of bones and join them back together and cook flesh in them and breathe life into them. We've got an army right there. There's no limit to that. And of course, we don't know how many angels he has. It's beyond our reckoning. Jesus talks about the fact that he could have called down 10 legions of angels to help him. That's a lot. He probably could have called for more than that. I'm sure God has more than that. And we don't know how big of an army he has. And then he says, and upon whom does not his light arise? Now whether he's referring to the sun, we know that the sun rises every day on everybody that's within range of the planet. Even now stretching out into space, the sun's there, his light shines. And of course, if he's talking about more specifically, the light, perhaps even a reference to the possibility of the coming Messiah, that light, Jesus said he came as a light into the world and shone in the darkness. And so, whichever that is, Jesus appears, or the sun, it shines on everybody. Jesus shines for everybody. Not everybody responds to it, not everybody sees that light or pays any attention to that light, but there is no one that can hide from that. Then we see chapter 26. Chapter 26, Job begins to speak again. He says in verse number 14, lo, these are parts of his ways. He has God, some of the things that God did and does, and it's pretty impressive some of the things he talks about. He talks about how the dead are formed, and he talks about how hell, or the grave, most likely, the reference to Sheol is the Hebrew word here, is naked before him. He can see beyond death. He can see past, present, future. It's all naked before him. He can see it. And he talks about, he stretches out the north over the empty place and hangeth the earth upon nothing. Now that verse in and of itself is of significance. Verse number 7. He stretches out the north over the empty place. It's interesting, as astronomers have looked out at the stars, they found that directly over the north pole there seems to be a great absence of stars. Of course, we have the North Star that we refer to many times, but around it, there's a big empty space. There seems to not be many stars at all in that particular region, so it's interesting. He talks about he stretched out the north over the empty place, the emptiness up there in the stars. And then he says he hangs the earth upon nothing. You know, the common wisdom of Job's time by many of the people of the world was the idea that either the earth was riding on the back of a great turtle, or that it was held up in the coils of a snake, or all these sorts of things. Of course, you know, they never could figure out what it was on. You know, they'd say, well, you know, there are four elephants all standing on the back of a great turtle, and they, you know, and they get on down, and they're all standing on something and standing on something. And, well, finally you get down to, well, what's that one standing on? And then they never had an answer for that. But Job knew. His wisdom that came from God told him, God hung the earth out there on nothing. It's not hanging by a string attached to something. It's not sitting on the back of some animal. Hercules isn't holding it up, or Atlas, I guess it is, holding the earth. No, it's just hanging out there. Now that the people have been out into space and have seen it, and they, yeah, sure enough, there it is, it's right there. How do you do that? Well, certainly we can. And that's what he talks about. The power that God has. And he mentions a few of these things. He says, lo, these, in verse 14, lo, these are part of his ways, but how little a portion is heard of him. He's saying all these things I'm talking about, that's just a little bit. That's just the edge of him. That's not even him. That's just seeing a little bit of what he's done. And he goes on then to say, but the thunder of his power, who can understand? He says, the God who can do all these things that are so far beyond our comprehension, how does the earth stay where it is and go where it's supposed to go? We can't duplicate that. We can't do anything like that. And he says, all these things are just the edge of the beginning of the fringe of the garment of God. That's nothing. He says, who's going to understand the full power that God has? Who can understand that? Here, just these little things are amazing to us. And he tells all through chapter 26 there in the other verses there, we didn't read them all, the things about God that are amazing. Things that it would take millions of people, millions of years to try to accomplish, and in many cases they would still fail, God did in a matter of moments. And does without, and keeps them that way without any effort whatsoever. Then in chapter 27, Job continues. In verse 2, he says, as God lives, who has taken away my judgment, and the Almighty who has vexed my soul, all the while my breath is in me, and the Spirit of God is in my nostrils, my lips shall not speak wickedness, nor my tongue utter deceit. Isn't that a courageous determination to make? How much better off would we be if we make that determination ourselves, that as long as I'm alive, I'm not going to speak anything wicked. I'm not going to speak anything that's deceitful. I'm going to tell the truth. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be speaking those things that are good in everything. But notice what he says in verse 3. All the while Jesus, and they're all living. They all breathe just like we breathe. Now they all do that. All of the animal world does that. But there was something special about Adam when he formed Adam. There was something so very special about him. He created that man in his image. The Bible tells us that he breathed into him the breath of life. We have, if you will allow the analogy, a peace of God, so to speak, in us. Something that makes us like God. We are the same kind of being in the sense that we have a part of us that's going to live eternally after this body is dead and gone. There's a part of us that's going to live forever just as he is eternal. Now we had a beginning unlike him. He never had a beginning. We had a beginning. But we'll have no end, just as he has no end. We're going to be with him or without him for eternity. And so what an amazing thing. But Job here says, the Spirit of God is in my nostrils. It's a very interesting phrase. You could probably study on that one for a long time to try to... But the soul of man, the spirit of man, and the connection between those things, and the way that it keeps us alive, and what part in our life it plays. James says that the body without the spirit is dead. So that spirit has some play in whether we're alive or not. So much that we don't understand sometimes about the way that that works, and that we may never understand fully until we are with God to be able to ask him. Then chapter 28, and verse number 28. Job continues on. Job's not going to stop. And, you know, every time he stops talking, one of his friends jumps in. So he's going to just keep on going. He's going to keep on going. He says in verse 28 something that it would be wise for us to learn and to live by. And unto man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding. Stay away from evil. That's truly understanding what your role in life is all about. And to fear the Lord, that shows true wisdom. True wisdom, Job tells. Then we go on to chapter 29 and we see in verse number 2. Job reminisces. Isn't that the way we do? When things are bad, we start to think back to how they were before. He says, oh, that I were as in months past, as in the days when God preserved me. See, Job knew that God had kept him from this disaster all that other time of his life. He doesn't know why God has ceased protecting him, but he knows where his protection came from. He knows that without God, he would have been utterly ruined from the time of his birth. So it's only through God's protection that he's been able to survive as long as he had and to go as long as he has. And he says, oh, that I were as in months past, in the days when God preserved me. Oh, it seems, well, I wish it was like it used to be. Any of you ever felt that way? I know sometimes as we get older and things start to not work the way they used to, and our memory doesn't work the way it used to, and our bodies don't work the way they used to, and the doctors work a lot more than they used to on us, and we start to say, oh, boy, I remember a time. Oh, I remember how it used to be, and that's the way Job is. And, oh, but look at the descriptions that he gives. We don't have time to go through all the descriptions, but I tell you what, this fellow was special. He was high up in his world that he lived in. Notice some of the things that he says about himself. We'll just briefly hit a few. In verse 8 he says, the young men saw me and hid themselves. Now there was a time when, you know, the young people, when the adults were together younger, they got out of the room. They didn't have a right to be there. I don't know whether that was necessarily good or bad, which way that go, but that's the way it was. And I think that's what Job referred to. When the young men saw him coming, they went ahead. They knew they didn't have any place in his presence. And the way a servant might get out of the way when the king is coming or something like that. And he says, and the aged arose and stood up. You know, we still today, we stand to honor somebody. presence, but it's somebody, we stand up and say, you know, we stand up to shake their hand or to, you know, to give them a little bow or whatever we're going to do. So, you know, we stand up to show them respect. And Job said even the old people would get up for him. And then he said the princes refrained talking and laid their hand on their mouth, and the nobles held their peace and their tongue peace to the roof of the mouth. He said, when I showed up to talk, to say that, everybody else got quiet to listen to what I had to say. He held quite a position in his land. And he goes on, he talks about how he was the eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. He talks about, he says in verse 14, I put on righteousness and it clothed me. My judgment was a robe and a diadem. A diadem being like a crown of sorts. He says, you know, I broke the jaws of the wicked. And he was doing so well. Everything was going right for him. He was indeed a powerful man, a rich man, and not one who had gotten it by ill gain. He was an honest man and a fair man. He watched out for the poor. He says, I was a father to the poor. He goes on and on about how things used to be, how he was respected and admired as a man. And then in verse 30, I mean chapter 30 rather, in chapter 30 beginning in verse 1, he says, But now, see how things change? He said, oh, this is the way it used to be. This is what used to have. He says, but now. And the amazing thing is, Job's still the same man. It tells us something about the respect and admiration of people, doesn't it? It's fickle. As long as he was wealthy and healthy, and they considered him wise. But when he lost that wealth and health, they lost respect for him. Even though he was still the same man. He was still the same upright, righteous man that he had been. But they lost their respect for him. It says, but now, they that are younger than I have me in derision, whose fathers I would have disdained to have sat with the dogs of my flock. He says, I wouldn't have even let their fathers watch my be with my sheepdogs to watch the sheep. He says, that's how lonely they were compared to me. He says, but now, they're looking down on me. They're disdaining me. They're disrespectful of me. They hold me in derision. They make fun of me. They mock me. Wow. What a turnaround. It's awful for any of us to have to face the scorn and mocking and people laughing at us and making fun of us and things like that. But for most of us, we've experienced that and we've just come to accept that that's going to happen. There's going to be some people that are going to make fun of us or test us or try to get at us. We know that that's just going to happen. But Job had never experienced that kind of thing. Or at least had not for many years. He was held in such high regard that nobody would have treated him that way. And so when now he comes to the point where people are treating him that way, how difficult that must have been for him to accept that, to handle that, and to deal with that. And he goes on to explain about these children. Verse 10, he says, they abhor me and spare not to spit in my face. And he goes on to talk more and more about them, about what these people think of him. Then chapter 31, we'll close out with this chapter. First of all, in verse 6, Job says, let me be weighed in an even balance, that God may know my integrity. That's quite an idea that Job has here. I wouldn't want to be weighed like that. I'm thankful that we're not weighed like that, but that we have the grace of Jesus. Because I wouldn't want to be weighed on an even scale. I'm afraid I'd wind up on the wrong side of that scale if he just weighed me based on myself. But Job, he wasn't afraid of that. Let me be weighed on an even scale. Let God know my integrity. He's bold. Roman government. He said, if I am worthy, if I have done anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. Only I appeal unto Caesar. He wanted to be tried to see whether he had broken the law that he was accused of breaking or not. And so Job here is saying, I want God to try him. He knows his friends have already condemned him. He said, you guys, y'all are giving me a fair trial here. I want to be weighed in the balances by God. I want him to do this. And we can understand why. People, as much as they even may try to be fair, we know they're not completely impartial, they're not completely fair. But God will be. God will be fair to everyone. No one will have cause to say, oh, he didn't do me right. He is as fair. In fact, he goes beyond fair. He goes far beyond being fair to so many and being merciful to thousands upon thousands. And then he says in verse 35, oh, that one would hear me. Behold, my desire is that the Almighty would answer me, and that my adversary had written a book. He said, I want God to answer me. I want him to come down and speak to me himself. He's tired of arguing with his friends about this. He wants to argue with God about it. Next week, Job's going to get his wish. I said, Job already got his wish, but we're going to see what happens when God does answer Job's call and Job's challenge to make that argument. We'll be looking at that next week again. If you're here tonight and you haven't need to respond to the invitation for any reason, if you're not a Christian and you need to become one tonight, there's no better time. If you want to be weighed in the balances, you better be sure you have Christ on your side, because without him, you'll lose every time. If you're here and you are a Christian, but perhaps you haven't given God the respect he deserves, or perhaps you haven't lived your life in the way that you should, maybe you would not be able